I do understand how people sort of come and go here because they miss their family. And luckily enough, we did have a large family and we still do have a large family and we actually like each other.
Hannah Fincham Thompson loves the Top End. She was born and bred in Nhulunbuy and is now raising her own family here. And she still says it is just the best place to live. And I've got to say, I am 100% with her on that. In this conversation, Hannah shares with us how her family ended up in the region and the hilarious stories from her childhood. How she became a teacher and then realised she wanted to try her hand at business. What it's like to raise her own children here and her hopes for the future of Northeast Arnhem Land post-mining. I had an absolutely awesome time speaking with Han, and as you'll soon find out, I was in stitches for a good chunk of the interview. But apart from being super funny, Hannah is a strong, determined and passionate woman who loves her ginormous family and her home dearly. So, without further ado, pull up a pew, sit back, relax and enjoy this week's episode of Northeast Arnhem Land with Mon. Now, just to get things rolling, a little bit of housekeeping. First up, thank you so much for clicking on this podcast. My name's Monica O'Hanlon, and you could say I'm a bit of a sticky beak. I just love hearing people's stories, because it's true what they say. Everyone's got one. I work at Gove FM in Northeast Arnhem Land in the NT. It's one of the most remote and unspoilt parts of Australia. If you're someone who isn't familiar with it, here's what you need to know. The Yolngu people are the traditional owners of this region. Their vibrant culture dates back more than 50,000 years. The hub, where I live, is called Nhulunbuy, a town created on the Gove Peninsula after the establishment of the bauxite mine. You're probably asking, what's the purpose of this podcast? I've met so many weird and wonderful people. Whether they're from here or just passing through, I want to know how their path led them to this tiny little dot on the map. And it would be my absolute pleasure to share it with you. And our history goes back quite a way.
It does. Through Govites.
Yeah, well, it's funny because I forget that you're a teacher.
Yeah, I know. I look so young.
You do. Not even, it was like a different lifetime ago.
Yeah, it was a lifetime ago. Yeah.
Because look at you now, you're a business owner. We're going to get into that a little bit later. But first up, let's start nice and easy right at the beginning. You were born in Gove, right?
Born in Gove. My parents came to town. Obviously, both mum and dad came to town to work for the mining company. And it all just started from there. Obviously, mum and dad both met in town at the Walkabout Lodge, as every good relationship starts.
At the jam.
At the jam. Dad was probably wearing stubbies and looking rather hot back in the day. Mum was a true hottie, so no doubt caught Dad's eye. And, yeah, and then I suppose, what do most people do? Have children. Not all, but most. And, yeah, we grow up, you know, grew up as little bush kids.
Yeah. What year did they come? And why did they each come separately? Because it's...
It is, yeah, it is. It is strange. So mum came working in the accounts department for Nabalco, and dad came working in the building sector for Nabalco. Yeah, it was just employment, I think. They just was, seeking employment. But actually, I could be wrong. I know that mum's parents actually were here. They were here before there was housing, even in Nhulunbuy. So my poppy, known as Oil Can Harry, he used to be a backhoe driver, and him and Nan lived in a tent out at where Bit It Jimmy is now.
Oh, yeah.
Right to the left of that was where all of the freight used to be exported in, I understand, before they had the wharves or anything like that. That's where they used to bring the freight in. And right there at that Bit It Jimmy site was where they had tents and things. And so Poppy and Nana were there. And then Yeah, so mum had parents living here, so she came, and I think the same with my dad. I think his parents were actually here. I'd have to clarify. I might have to do my own research on my own history.
Well, yeah, get back to me on that.
I will, yeah. Yeah, so obviously there was family connection here, but it was employment. They came here seeking employment and they did meet here. And, yeah, so we're all born at Gove Hospital up in the, nursery up there.
In the frangipani room.
In the frangipani room, yep, that's right, with the best view in town from the hospital window looking at the bush. Yeah, so... Yeah, born and raised.
Wow. And what was your childhood like growing up here?
Listen, I thought it was unreal. I remember as a child doing lots of things like at the site where the old indoor cricket centre, that was like just dirt and bush there. And we used to, for whatever reason, there were old culverts and stuff there. And we used to chase races, you know, the lizards, the races.
The tartar lizards.
Yeah, the tartar lizards, yeah. And chuck them in there and then so they had nowhere to escape and we just would put them, collect them and put them in there. They probably died. It wasn't probably very kind. But I do remember great memories of being in that south area because that's where we grew up, in south. So, yeah, there and blue tongue lizards and, yeah, doing just a lot of catching of stuff. Yeah, catching and killing probably.
So you're a born hunter.
Yes, yes, in the bush. And then I suppose I remember Foodland being there. I don't know obviously when that sort of started, but when mum and dad, they're in their same house now, they did start living in Feldegg. So in Feldegg Street, which is in south, my grandparents lived in 20 Feldegg, and that's an old Donga style house. And so the whole family lived there. Mum said there was about 30 of them all in this little house in Feldegg, and they grew up there. And then for whatever reason, I think Auntie Sue's family got public housing. So then they were in Magnolia, and they were both in public housing, and they built the house in Chippers. So the house that mum and dad still live in now and that we all grew up in, you know, is as older children, was in Chippers. And mum and dad built that house. And, yeah, so we grew up on the south side. But I always remember getting on my pushing and riding through the bush to Foodland.
So that turned into IGA, right? Or is this a whole different thing?
Well, it turned into IGA, which is now Gove Warehouse.
Yeah.
So Foodland was all we knew it as, and we would go to Foodland to do the shopping. No joke, I used to be able to take a letter there to Foodland and buy my nan smokes. Truly, she would write a letter for me and send me with cash to go and get her durries.
What did she smoke? What was her favourite diet?
Listen, I don't remember the name of them. I knew there were hundreds in there. Because I used to flog a few. And
just a carton.
It was just like the really big, thick pack of lots of darts, as many as I could fit in there, I suppose.
The good old days.
The good old days, back when shit didn't kill you. Well, you never knew it did. Yeah. So, that was, the start of just living in Southside. Yeah, just I was busy. You know,
catching lizards,
just busy kid. And I remember when you rode from south to Foodland, it was not uncommon to come across a buffalo. At all, you could smell them a mile away, and that's when you're, oh my God, like, yeah,
and
turn around, go forward. You know, I suppose that depended on how desperate you were to get Foodland.
They did have good lollies there.
They did have a great lolly section there. That was the place to be. Yeah, and I mean, I don't know how long ago that we used to have the deli there. Like really good hot chooks, good sort, you know, good deli. We need a good deli.
And the bakery too. They had the fresh
bread. They did
breads.
Have really good bread there, didn't
Those
they?
Those herbed focaccias.
They did.
Yeah. Amazing.
It was.
Pre-made salad, hot chook and some rolls out to the beach.
Mate, not that I'd ever want to get into the food industry, but somebody out there should really you know, hone in on that.
Absolutely.
It's a market. I'd eat a good hot chook. Good fresh bread.
Are there any standout memories from your childhood?
Listen, I don't know why this just jumped into my brain, but I do remember Mum and Dad towing us in a little Suzuki down East Woody Beach with a parasail. No joke. And on the beach. With a little Suzuki, and the Suzuki just roar up the beach, and here we were as children connected to a parachute, and yeah, and they would roar us up and down the beach, yeah, in this parasail. It was like an event. It was a day. You know, I do remember actually that they left my sister up there over lunchtime, as it was like this family joke. It wasn't funny.
Like a kite, they could just fly the kite.
Yeah, no, just left her up there. It was just connected to the back of the car, and the car didn't even need to go because the wind obviously was really good. And there she was, just attached. Well, we were all eating lunch. She was not impressed. not impressed at all. Funny.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
How did they even learn how to do that?
I have no idea. I really have no idea how or why they ever would have done such a thing, but they did. Yep. And yeah, so we did that. I remember as a child, old man Wag, Dan Wag's dad, taking us for the most amazing helicopter flight ever. I've got such vivid memory of him flying us that close to the water along the Cape that the water was wetting our feet.
What?
No joke. Yes, it was just so unreal. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, so I remember doing that. I remember lots of fishing trips in the bay using a hand line, and I always felt so frightened being in the boat with my father. Stuff never felt quite safe. I always was really on edge, you know, because he has a way of stuff going wrong. And, you know, he just must get in the boat and just get in it and just go and just hope there's fuel and hope the trailer stays together. And he just lived a lot on hope. He just never checked much. But I do remember pulling up and just tying off to one of the dolphins.
Yeah.
Well, you know, like out near the wharf, and tying off there and hooking up on the biggest stingray ever. And my parents like just fully up me like, come on, tough it out. You'll be right. Pull it in. Come on. And I'm like, no joke. I couldn't believe they weren't going to help me. They were like, nah, you'll be right. Pull it in. And, yeah, and then when this friggin' stingray come to the top, they were like, whoa, that would have been really hard. You know, if you've ever caught a stingray, they really are hard to pull in because just of their, you know, sheer shape.
Yeah.
They're just, like, going against you the whole way. Yeah, and it was only then that they were like, oh, well, let me help you. Let's add the surface. You know, let me help you now. It's like, gosh, I'd like cut hands on the hand line. That's all we ran was a hand line. So, yeah, no gloves. No, back in the day, there was never gloves. But yeah, so lots of fishing adventures and one of, you know, Turtle Beach was our go-to. You know, that's what we did in the school holidays. Is we went to Turtle Beach. And we would have all of the cousins, so the Laverty's, you know, the Haddocks, our family, the Thompsons, all of the, because we had a lot of family that lived at, you know, as young children as well. So there was a big mob of us, similar to what there is now. None of us have gone far. But, we used to put just giant big tarps down and it would just be like this big slumber party, swag after mattress, just all on, be the big tarp. And they would, put one giant big tarp over the top of us as well. And And we would stay there the entire school holidays. And the guys would go back in for work and work during the day and then bring out more ice and bring out more food and supplies. And yeah, and we would just camp at Turtle Beach. And that was our – and I've got the best memories of that just being so good. I mean, I don't remember very much adult supervision at all. And no one sat on the beach to watch your children in the water. It was just like, you know, survival of the fittest. None of us died. But, you know, there was absolutely no supervision. Mum had probably sat was different. But the honest truth is no, there was no sunscreen. Everyone got burnt. Everyone got booby rash. You know, not, there wasn't many bathers, you know, just wearing a shirt and, you know, knickers. And sea lice, you know, and swimming, boogie boarding all day. That's all we did. And so, yeah, we would spend our day all day down the beach. They'd call us to come up for lunch. And I remember we'd have chicken rolls, chicken and salad rolls, and they'd put out a big spread. And so, you know, at Turtle Beach, when you come down the hill now,
yeah,
and in the left, sorry, in the right there, there's that big shady area.
Yeah.
That's where we camped. There never was the bollards there, of course, you know. And, yeah, we'd all camp there. And then towards the beach, where is all the sort of bull dusty sort of there, we would, that would be our kitchen area. So we'd have, you know, tarps and stuff set up there, and that's where our kitchen was. So we'd all eat lunch, and that's where we'd have the fire, and we'd go down the beach and swim all day long. And I don't know, not many people know this. I'm going to disclose a couple of secrets. You know, there's that walking trail to the left, you know, like if you're looking at the water.
To Bondi.
To Bondi, yep. As you first come over, like there's a little mound that you first go over, and then you sort of walk straight ahead. To the right of that, it's like some dense forest there. But if you walk under there, we used to call it the Burnie Bead Forest and the Fairy Forest, like full imagination going on in there. It was like dead set. It was like you, because you walk in under that sort of leafy foresty area and it's really deep. So you walk in there and, yeah, it's quite like, and then you crawl all the way down and you, and then you can, yeah, walk, and there's a giant, you stand under a big canopy of trees. And so we used to spend heaps of the day in there collecting Burnie Beads.
Oh, yeah.
You know the Burnie Beads?
Yeah, you rub them on,
on the concrete and you burn your cousins. Yep, that's exactly what you do if you're a boy. Find any surface to rub them as hard as you can and then walk up and burn your cousins. So there was that. So we'd spent hours there. And then, you know, the left-hand side rocks, like as you're looking at the water, the left-hand side rocks there. I mean, have you ever tried to walk on anything like that barefoot?
Oh, we were looking at it yesterday. It's like bubbles of, you know.
It's like volcanic. It's the sharpest rock. You'd never walk it now as an adult.
No
supervision. Up we'd go walking along that rocky edge there. And if you look at it, if you ever get a chance, if you look at it, there is a cat made out of a rock, like a cat sitting on, perched on a rock. And if you look, yeah, there is a cat there. You see it in the shape of a rock sitting on a ledge.
Not around the other side, but
you can see it from the beach. Okay. Yeah, if you're looking out at the water on your left-hand side, the sharp-as rock there, to the closest to the water, obviously, you can see a ledge and you can see a cat sitting on it.
Wow.
Yeah, there's just, bizarre places, so much to do. And then if you go the right side and then you go along the cliff side, you know, from where I'm talking about where the kitchen is, if you're looking at the beach, and then that, you go up and climb up the rocks and walk along that whole coastal edge. And we would go flower collecting, and each morning get up and go for a walk and collect flowers for the table. Breakfast table. It was really beautiful.
Idyllic, doesn't it?
It was really, really cool. It was a beautiful way to grow up. And I mean, I do understand how people sort of come and go here because they miss their family and, you know, and they stay for a while, and some people more than others. But, you know, most of the time people leave because they want to be back close with their family.
Yeah.
So luckily enough, we did have a large family, and we still do have a large family, and we actually like each other. So we so we do spend a lot of time hanging out together and, yeah, living life and adventuring and, yeah, hanging out together. Yeah.
What was school like for you, Hen?
Listen, primary school, you know, I thought it was good. I don't have too many bad memories, I don't think. I think.
<That's good.
laughs> No, school, I just remember, you know, always the hustle to the bus, to the bus stop. You know what it's like.
Yeah, yeah.
Getting ready for school. I remember mum, you know, the standard yelling in the morning, if you don't get to the bus, you're walking. You know, that sort of stuff. We never walk very often. She'd then have to drive us, which I think is why she was yelling at us. But, yeah, just catching the bus to school with all my friends and stuff. The school was just as it is now. I don't remember it being too much different. I mean, obviously I was a teacher and did teach at the school. So, yeah, it was – yeah, I thought it was a great school and grew up there. And
were you a good student? Were you well behaved?
Oh, listen, I'm going to say I wasn't very smart.
Oh, come on.
But I wasn't really interested. You know, I was happy playing sport. Sport was my thing. Yeah. I loved playing sport. Was never a real good reader. Never desired to be. And, yeah, my other sisters were, and that used to suck because they could read better than me and, you know.
Different strengths, though,
that's
right?
That's it. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You know, as a grown adult now, I've let it go.
But After all these years.
But no, I had a great time at Norlamboy Primary School and had lots of, I mean, thinking about some of the cool things I did. I went away for a school sports trip to Aliangoola over at Groot.
Cool.
So, and I have a really cool memory of flying over there and yeah, just doing athletic sports with all the young all over there. And yeah, and because I was into running and sport, you know, and Yungle are so good at sport that I think back then, whether it's less or it's the same now, I'm just not in that area. But, yeah, we did a lot with Yungle kids from other community schools and going over there, it was really fun. That was a really top memory over there. And I remember a lot of the events, but just being on the beach. Everything was at the beach. I don't actually know why. I don't even know what I travelled for. Maybe it was just like a school sports, like sort of, anything.
Yeah.
Like it was just a combination of different sports. But I remember we stayed at the school and just camped in one of the classrooms on swags and, yeah, and then we just went to down to the beach each day to participate in different events. But, yeah, that was really cool.
Sweet.
Yeah.
And did you do high school here?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. So I and then went on to Norlamboy High School And I thought the high school then was great as well. I had a great time over there. Did lots of, I mean, one of the cool things I remember is, and I think you might have done it, Mom, because I think I might have been teaching when you did this. But do you remember snorkeling off where Bidderjimmy is? Where?
Yeah, we definitely. Do you know what year it was? I remember definitely we used to do all that kind of stuff with them.
I mean, snorkelled. I wouldn't snorkel now off Bidderjimmy. You know, like I think back, yeah, let's just take a class. Out we go. We're going to snorkel near Crocodile Creek. Just off Crocodile Creek. We're going to do a snorkeling session.
<It's> true.
You know, let's take a whole class of kids.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. They say that the crocodile population has
increased.
Yeah, so it's a little bit different times.
It is, absolutely. But, you know, yeah, that's the sort of stuff we did, you know. We, went snorkeling off Crocodile Creek.
And Croc-infested waters.
Croc-infested waters. And, yeah, we did lots of, like we did a really cool camp. Yeah, so I was doing lots of cool stuff as a young person, you know. Going over to Darwin for netball and, yeah.
Yeah, epic. Did you end up representing NT for stuff?
We did, So I represented the NT for netball and was in the NT Institute of Sport for netball, which was really – I loved that. That was – it was a lot just about not just about netball, but preparing your body and understanding from an Institute of Sport perspective, you know, doing lots of body strength and testing and that sort of stuff, which I really loved, you know, testing and monitoring your fitness and your speed and your strength and, yeah, and then seeing that correlate on the court. And so that was really, really good. And I also represented for touch footy, and I loved travelling with the touch footy team. That was always had, you know, much more fun in the touch realm. Netball was so serious and quite catty. But with touch footy, it felt so much more fun, but still the same level of expectation about being fit and, you know, and being a good sportsman.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, but, yeah, all what, good fun.
Yeah, well, it sounds like you had a bloody brilliant upbringing, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
What happened after high school? Did you, because you obviously... You studied to become a teacher?
I did, but before that, I actually took up a clerical traineeship and did that at the Nullumbu Primary School.
Ah.
Yeah, with Angie Stanaway, her and Ange and I, yeah, in the front office. Yeah, and Rebecca Dargaville.
I know.
You know Pecky?
Name. I do. I just can't picture the
name.
Yeah, you know,
Maria Akapita's Nana, she probably calls
her.
Oh, Peck. Yeah, so she was the finance officer for the primary school. But, yeah, in the front office with Ange Stanaway and myself, and did my clerical traineeship there, which was so awesome. I learnt so many good office skills because we used to go up to where housing is now in that TAFE area. We would go there once a week and you would do training. So, you know, you'd do your typewriting, and not your typewriting, I'm not that old. But you know your word skills on your computer, you know.
Francis Mac, or was
what was it?
McNanny?
You know, there was a bit of a game. There was something, but you did have to get your word count up, without looking. You know, and you'd have to So we did that. What do they call that? Sort of when you're speed testing or whatever. You know, you speed test on the computer.
The beep test type version.
That's it, but on the computer, yeah. So we did that, and we did lots of like drafting letters and that sort of skill.
Cool.
So I thought that was fantastic. I really loved that. That gave me a lot of skills for going into uni. And then, then I went off to CDU, just over to Darwin, didn't want to travel far. obviously NT girl through and through, but so I went to Darwin and studied to be a teacher.
Sweet. So how did you compare going from growing up here your whole life to living in Darwin?
Listen, because I'd done a bit of sport and over and back, I actually knew Darwin quite well. Yeah. So again, I was in my comfort zone and was able to go to uni, and I did have family and friends over in Darwin, so I boarded with a friend I started on campus and then moved in with a family friend at the time, and but Darwin was good. It had the nightlife that, you know, I was looking for, and did lots of cool things, driving around out to obviously went out and saw as much as I could out in Darwin. And yeah.
So was that 3 years? Was that course 3 years?
It was 3 years. Just as I was about to finish, of course, I extended it to 4 years.
Oh, so you had to stay on for another
year?
Yes.
Well,
they're
allowed
to do that.
It was frustrating. Like, you know what it's like. You study, study, study. You're about to get qualified. They allowed me to teach, but it meant I then had to study an extra year externally.
God. So did you come straight back?
No, I didn't. I actually moved to Port Keats. To Wadair. So I taught out in Port Keats for about 14 months out there.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was an awesome experience. Very cool being in an Aboriginal community but not near Yolngu family, because I'd grown up so closely with Aboriginal people. But going to Port Keats, it was it was just people that, you know, I just didn't know, and I liked that challenge about getting to know the, you know, Aboriginal people out there and their community. And I worked as a teacher out there and really loved that. Yeah, really loved teaching out at Port Keats and the fishing that what air offers, and yeah, it was a very different community. It was always a little bit frightening. I was there when that shooting occurred, when that police officer, for whatever reason, there was the altercation in the street, and the police officer, you know, I understand, accidentally shot one of the Indigenous people out there in an altercation. I'm not sure how it all happened, but we were there at the school at the time, and oh, it was horrific.
Oh, wow.
Really, 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 you know, it's amazing how intuitive Yolngu people are, because, like, they knew something was happening.
Mm.
And they weren't even there. You know, children in the classroom, you could see as a teacher that something was happening in the community, because you could sense something happening with the children, and they're all talking, and obviously it didn't speak the language, but, you know, you could tell enough that something was about to happen, and or something was happening that was quite serious. And then, yeah, then all of a sudden we just got the call to lock that, to get all the children from the classroom down into the library, and we locked everyone, all the staff and all the children, into the library. And yeah, and then it was, then the community, the TOs, said that they wanted us to let all their children home. So we had to let all the children out of the library, and then all of our staff got into what they called it, a bush bus. So, you know, like a bus with a cage on the back.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we all had to get into the back of the bus and lay down in the back of the caged bus and travel all the back roads to drop all the teaching staff off. It really stirred something quite, you know, terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't really know the full story of what actually happened, but obviously somebody was killed in that incident. And, yeah, and no one, you know, when people are upset and angry, I mean, you just don't know what's going to happen. So,
yeah, there's obviously some tension there.
There was absolutely tension in the community.
And you would have been so young too.
I was so young, I was only so young, but, you know, believe it or not, pregnant.
Oh, you were pregnant?
I was. I was pregnant with Ella, my eldest daughter.
Oh.
Yeah. So I was pregnant when I was teaching out there. And children, you know, love having pregnant people around them. And they all love that. I do remember being so heavily pregnant, and this bloody camp dog chased me right up the main street of Port Keats. They're trying not to laugh, but laughing hysterically as I'm heavily pregnant, running up the road, trying to get this dog away from me. Oh, gosh, somebody came and saved me. One of the ladies came and saved me and, you know, shooed the dog off. But, then as I got closer to being due for Ella, that's when I came back to Gove, to be close to family and, you know.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so now you've got four kids?
Four.
Incredible.
Incredible breeder.
You've got a good uterus.
I do, absolutely. Even think about, you know, doing the nasty and I'm pregnant. truly. I've got to use like three sorts of contraception to stop me getting pregnant.
Very fertile.
Very fertile. Yeah, crazily fertile.
Absolutely.
It is a gift. It is a gift. And I absolutely acknowledge that, because I know that many people struggle with falling pregnant. So I do absolutely acknowledge that. So yes, four children, three beautiful girls who are now, like Ella would call herself 16, but of course she's not 16 until December. So 16, one turning 14 next month, and one turning 12. So 12, 14, 16, and Leo, 2. I know.
Wow.
Leo the Ranger, back to 2.
And when can we expect number 5?
No, it's not happening, Mon. There's some new contraception out. No.
Foolproof.
That's right. Never, ever to produce again. I've done my bit for populating East Arnhem Land.
It must be interesting. Do you ever compare your childhood to what theirs is like now? I guess it must be quite similar in a way, right?
It is quite similar. I think the challenge is now is that bloody devices. You know,
technology.
We never had them as a kid. You know, all I remember is when I was probably 17, carrying, my old man forced me to carry his brick of an iPhone. Like, it was like carrying the sat
was
phone.
Was it an iPhone or was it one of those?
Oh, sorry. But yes. Of course, iPhone. It was like carrying the sat phone. You know, one of the sat phone. Yeah, it was like you had to hold it with two hands just to make a call, you know. And even then I took it and, you know, pretended it was it died and that I'd forgotten the time and didn't get home until, you know, past the time I was meant to be home. But, yeah, so back in the day we never had devices or anything. So if you wanted to see your mate, you had to ride there and everything was close. So you did, you rode or walked or, you know, called on the good old house phone and, yeah, and called your mates and teed up something to do. And, yeah, and, I mean, again, luckily enough, being fortunate, we, you know, my parents would buy, you know, bought some little car. We always had some little bloody shit box that we would ride around in here and
the old Suzuki.
Yeah, yeah, the old Susie or the Moke, the Mini Moke.
Oh, you had a Mini Moke.
Yeah. Oh, I love that Mini Moke. Had such great memories in the Mini Moke. You know, once we got our license, we were so lucky. I mean, my mum was very good like that. If we she was more than happy to lend the four-wheel drive and we'd just go out camping. Group of girlfriends, chuck us in the car, we'd all just drive out there with water, of course. Water and, you know, healthy food. Not and just go and camp and, you know, have a fire and get drunk by the fire as a teenager. It was actually really good fun. Great as a young person growing up here. I just think for my children now, the problem is the devices, you know, they spend a lot of time, yeah, on their devices, communicating via text rather than just going and having a conversation with your mate.
Yeah, and people like constantly filming. Like, I don't have Snapchat. I feel like I have friends that have Snapchat, and you're having like a really nice moment for whatever, whether it's a birthday or maybe you're just having a really nice conversation or something. And then suddenly people get out the phones and like do the thing, and it kind of ruins the
Yeah, it does ruin the moment. Yeah. Yeah, it really does. And I mean, listen, I'm at fault of it. My kids would say, you're worse than us. But
you've got a business though.
Yeah. So, you know, when I'm getting emails coming through, my children will be trying to talk to me and I'm trying to read an email and they'll be like, nah, you're not even listening, are you? Nah, you're not listening. I'm like, no, because I'm working and I'm trying to work out whether you've got something sensible to ask me or are you just trying to, you know, peck me to death. But, yeah, so I think that's probably it for young children is just the devices. I mean, we force them to come camping. They hate the idea of it initially, you know, initially it's like, and then once they're there, they love it. Yeah. It's just that whole, they're going out of reception, you know, is the first thing. Yeah. It's going, oh, my friends aren't there and, you know, that sort of thing. And what am I going to do? And I hate fishing and, you know, that sort of stuff. But actually when they're there and in the moment, they really do love it.
Yeah, of course. It's just children, I think, in general.
It is, yeah.
That's a nice segue, though, with you talking about your business. So you went from teaching and now you are a business owner.
Yeah. Based on real estate. Yeah, that's right. So I don't know. I was thinking about this as I was coming in to wonder why I actually left teaching. I think internally I did just have an entrepreneurial desire. Both my parents are business owners and without me knowing it, I probably was quite entrepreneurial anyway. And I think that's really hard to pursue when you're working in a government education sort of field. So I absolutely loved teaching, but it just didn't fulfill my desires for that entrepreneurial side of me. I think I've stayed quite close to children. So I do a lot of things like the youth sponsorship that we run through the business and giving back to youth within the region. And you know, I was heavily involved in netball and doing coaching and touch footy and those sorts of things. So that's how I think I got my fix with young people besides having four children of my own. Yeah, for whatever reason, I left the education department and started studying. I mean, I studied most of my life, so studying something different wasn't really that challenging for me. I studied to achieve my real estate license externally.
Amazing.
Yeah, so I did that whilst I was teaching and, yeah, just studied, you know, after work and of a night time. And then, yeah, and then I started my business and obviously just word of mouth with family and friends, started acquiring clients And then I was working from home and then luckily enough my family owned a commercial premises which had some vacancy in it. So I was able to start working outside of my home and, yeah, and then open up my business. And from then we've just grown year on year. And, yeah, and I've really, really enjoyed the challenge of business. I love business. I do love all that it offers and all of its challenges.
Why real estate? Because to me it's just such a wacky idea, you know, like I would never, like what was the thing that prompted you?
In all honesty, I remember it very clearly. My mum and I talking about the fact that education wasn't probably fulfilling my desires, and she said, listen, we've got plenty of property. They did. They were quite heavy property owners in town. They both owned businesses, so they had to have accommodation for their staff. So,
yeah.
And that was just a bloody headache for them. So they said, why don't you start a real estate business in town? You know, we've got property. So-and-so's got property, this property, you know. And then we just sort of started to do the numbers on that there was a market there for it.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So I guess, Han, then, what are your hopes and dreams for the next 5 to 10 years or even further? What are your goals in life?
So I love living in Nullumbuy. I love everything it's got to offer. I love fishing and I love camping. So I love my family. They are really good people. They also love the community and love the lifestyle. So when you're around like-minded people and we actually like each other, we do spend a lot of time together. And so many times it's just about connecting with family and working out what's our next camping trip, what's our next, you know, what are we doing next? So I generally like to have something planned, even if it's, you know, yeah, every weekend we are so busy. Very rarely are we sitting around home doing nothing. So we've usually got a camping trip set, camping or fishing. We do a lot of things together in the sense of planning a trip. I know even next year the family are all heading over to Amsterdam for one of the cousins' 50th and it's dad's 70th. And we've got lots of like big events like that. And Sarah and Rod are getting married in Bali. So amongst all the family events of who's getting married and, you know, and someone's big zero birthday and that sort of stuff, amongst that and just our own family trips, we usually have, you know, it fills the calendar pretty well. So long term on, for me, I life here for me, yeah, and then just filling it all in with holidays in and around it. Yeah, there's not really I see myself here well and truly past the closure of the refinery. I'm really looking forward to seeing how that, you know, just how that happens, because it's a really interesting path ahead and it will be interesting how it all happens, because the history of our region, I don't think people know enough about it. You know, I was actually talking to my partner Aaron about it, just, you know, the fact that our region as Ngāpiti Whitefellas are really quite, it's just so young, you know, and Whitefellas came into the East Arnhem region without the consent of Yolngu traditional owners and carried out business here on this land without the consent of Yolngu people and really had very little regard for Yolngu people and even the fact that it was their country and their land and came into our region, to this region, and carried out what they thought they had the right to do. I mean, you can't change the past, but acknowledging that that actually occurred and it didn't happen that long ago.
Yeah.
You know, it was less than 50 years ago.
Yeah, which is insane.
It's insane. I mean, like I'm 38. It's not that long ago. And then, so historically, you know, my grandparents came when there was not housing here and the beginning of the, of the mining company. And the fact that now we're coming to the end of a lifetime of the, you know, of the mine and, you know, seeing that cycle occur in this town and knowing that, you know, really Yolngu people, I don't know whether you know, it's a generalisation, but we're so lucky that Yolngu people have accepted Ngāpaki and what has happened and mm-hmm. what's done is done and working towards trying to together make a future for the region. This next stage is about working together about what we together want it to look like on Aboriginal land and knowing that we living on Aboriginal land and trying to get the best outcome of what wasn't a great start to the region. Yeah, and trying to do it respectfully. Ngāpaki and Yolngu discuss what that looks like after mining. We all rely heavily on population. Population is what provides doctors and nurses and educators and that's there's no doubt in that. And Yolngu people and Ngāpaki working together to make sure that we have a viable, strong, healthy, balanced future.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Han, I've just realised I've forgotten to ask you about something that's pretty important in your life. I've totally forgot to bring up Aaron. Can you tell us a little bit about how you guys met?
You know, I met my partner Aaron on Australia Day.
Really?
I did.
How long ago was that?
God, time flies. So if Leo's two, I would have met him a year. I would have been pregnant for a year before that. So, yeah, 2 years before that, before Leo was born. So, yeah, so I met Aaron on Australia Day through friends and we obviously have very similar desires and love of fishing and camping and business. I mean, as has started his own business, Arnamaldo's, and we get to share the same premises, so I get to have a good perv on him every now and again when I look at him. And if he races off to work before me, I get to go out there and give him a smooch on the sly. yeah, but, you know, meeting Aaron and obviously, you know, have very similar desires. So we do both love going fishing all the time. We love camping. We love holidaying and travelling. So, and business, I mean, helping Aaron start his own business, just, I mean, in the sense of knowing, you know, little things like, oh, what accounting system should I use and yeah, how to set up your accounting system and very basic things like that, you know, you lean on people and,
absolutely,
you know, just a tip here and there, nothing awesome, you know, how to set up, you know, when he got his first employee, how to set up wages and, you know, those sorts of
gritty nitty stuff.
Yeah, those little bits and pieces that nobody can teach you. You just sort of learn it on the way. And when you've got someone that's already done it and I can say, oh, yeah, babe, I did this when I started and I use this and this is how I do it. And, yeah, so different things like that. But obviously As didn't have children when we met and he is and obviously wanted to be a father, so he off I went again. off I went again.
He met just the right girl.
Yeah, he did. That's right. Contraception out, baby in. It was just like that, you know. Honestly, well, I had my contraception out for 4 days and looking back on the dates, I was pregnant in 4 days. Oh, it's craziness.
That's insane.
Insane. Insane.
Potentially Nhulunbuy's most fertile woman.
Oh, craziness. Yeah. So, you know.
Amazing. So he was planned.
He was planned. Absolutely. Yep. Yep. We said we'd give it 12 months. If I wasn't pregnant 12 months, we would shut it down and pregnant 4 days. So bang, straight on. And then, it was, yeah, I mean, I'd been pregnant that many times before. It was just like nothing. Just, you know, back to it again. Just had to, you know, go and ask all my girlfriends for pregnancy clothes and all that stuff and back to there. But, you know, the pregnancy was really quite easy and, and I thought I was just having another girl. And so we actually didn't have a boy's name. We had a girl's name and Yeah, and then, yeah, went up to Gove Hospital and, yeah, up there at the hospital in the maternity ward. They're just an amazing team up there. And, yeah, really lucky to have such a fantastic facility in our community. Yeah, but went and had Leo up there and really quite funny because, you know, gave birth to Leo. I actually had my two big girls in with me in that labour.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a good form of contraception.
It is, absolutely. No, having a two-year-old's a good form of contraception. See, this is what you'd have all of your own. Yeah, but, yeah, so those my big girls came in with me, my mum, and had Leo, and it's quite funny, you know, being news travels, Mon, and before I knew it, my first guests were my nephews. They had heard somewhere along the grapevine at school, and I had Leo at 1:50, and the boys had walked from high school straight up and burst through the door. So they were my first guests.
No.
Yeah, so my sister's boys, Josh and Noah, and my cousin, Pat and Corinne Laverty, their son, Jim. So, yeah, they burst in the room and there they were, my, yeah, my nephew's there ready to hold.
Umbilical cord still attached.
All of that, Mon. Really? Yep. I had not even birthed a placenta. Yep. Yep, there they were, burst through the door, you know.
Were they shocked or they're used to it? There's so many kids,
yeah,
right?
There are so many children. Yeah, so no, they were super excited to hear that it was a boy, I think, because they all, the family and I thought, Naz and I thought we were having a girl. So, yeah, to hear that there was another boy born, they were very excited. So all the boys come up and had a cuddle and, yeah, so, yeah, but being a big family, yeah, it wasn't long after the whole ward was full of family and, yeah, family and friends, and to have little Leo in our life is really quite exciting. I never thought, you know, having a stepping back into baby world would be that much fun, but he's a really good kid and we take him everywhere with us, so it's actually not too inhibiting. It probably keeps me a bit more sober these days, having a child and having to be a bit more responsible, you know, when there's a baby in tow. So that, yeah, that really does help. The girls adore him and they really do enjoy his company. You know, life is wonderful. I've got great family. I've got an awesome business. I've got great committed staff. Yeah, so living in Arnhem Land and running my own business and having my good family, I'm content. I mean, my mum is probably my biggest, you know, if I think of my business mentoring, my mum has absolutely been my biggest mentor. She's obviously, you know, she ran her own business, had her own staffing issues, had to house staff, had business challenges. But my mum is so damn smart. She's so business savvy. She's really, she's got so much business now. She knows how to look at profit and loss. She knows she's very, very brutal about the fact that business owners must make money.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's some of the mistake that business owners make is that they think, you know, they think that it's a crime to make money, but it's actually a damn necessity.
Well, that's why you make a business.
Yeah, that's why you have a business, but you do have to charge for your services and, you know, it's not cheap living here and operating a business here, and people think you're rolling in the cash and in all honesty, if I knew what I knew now, I'm sure that I wouldn't have jumped into the venture of starting my own business, because it's, you do way more hours than anybody else would in just if you worked for the government, so to say. Way more hours of a night time and early morning and the buck stops with you. And my mum has been my biggest supporter of the mentality, you know, when it's time to celebrate, because, you know, it is important to enjoy the wins, and because there's plenty of losses in business and plenty of times of disappointment or distress. And the other, you know, the other thing she reminds of us, you know, don't get too high and don't get too low, because, you know, it's just a constant roller coaster that you have to remain balanced and because, yeah, there's plenty of times when, when you could just not want to get out of bed and not want to face the world because it's a brutal week ahead. But, you know, she's been really good at saying, you know, turn the page, turn the leaf, move on. What's done is done. Yeah, but she's first to come with a bottle of champagne and say, let's celebrate. So, yeah, she's been a fantastic mentor. My dad, who also was a business owner, I think what my dad does really well is he just cooks food for us, you know. He turns up, cooks food. If I say I need help with the children, he does not ask a question. Amazing. He just does. You know, if I ring my dad and say, Dad, I need your help, he is like, he will drop everything. It shits my mum immensely that we can have that effect on our father. She can write a list for a week and just please, can you do that one thing? And he just won't do it. But if one of us kids ring and say, I need your help, he's there in a flash. And my dad is he's our biggest advocate. He just loves his children immensely, and I think that's all you need sometimes, is someone to love you and say, it's all right. It's been a crap week. There's plenty of crap weeks, but, you know, we love you and we're here and we can help you and taking the kids, making a meal, hugging you, you know, telling you that you're loved is – yeah, he is awesome, my dad. So I'm very lucky.
Amazing.
Yeah. Well, that's it.
Well, Hans, thank you so much for coming
in.
That's
all right.
Such a pleasure. And it's such an honour to have you in.
You probably don't look back on your life all that often, do you?
No.
You know, unless somebody forces you to sit down and think about your life.
Probes you.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and it makes you dig out all the cobwebs of memories and stuff like that. And, yeah, so, yeah, it's good. No, I really enjoyed it, actually. Oh, so thank you, Mon, for encouraging me to do this.
My absolute pleasure.
That was episode 26 of the podcast, which means there is just one more to go before the end of season one. I still can't believe it. I've had an absolute ball making this series. Now, as always, I need to say thank you to GovFM. Before I left, I recorded this interview in their fabulous studio. They're an absolutely incredible community radio station. So thanks, guys. Absolute legends. A massive thank you to everyone who has given me their time and shared their stories so far. I am still in total awe of the people of this region. And last, but certainly, certainly not least, thank you for listening. Thanks for rating the podcast, leaving reviews and your messages. They're all very much appreciated. The final episode will be released very, very shortly, so keep your eyes and your ears peeled. But for now, my name's Monica O'Hanlon, and that was Northeast Arnhem Land with Mon.